Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll hear from Andrew Burnett and Barry Trotz in 1 hour, their end-of-season press conference for the Nashville Predators. We will carry that live and in its entirety right here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. But breaking news this morning, the Titans are signing Tyler Boyd. And joining us now to break it all down is our friend Trevor Maddich, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook and Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Caroline Fenton, Adam Vingan, in for Jared Stillman today. Trevor, appreciate you for joining us and appreciate you for being flexible with our schedule today. First and foremost, Titans signed Tyler Boyd. Your initial reaction to the move?
Caroline, I don't like it. I love it. I love it. This extends what I think has the potential to be one of the best off seasons for the Titans in recent memory. Now, guys need to play, and especially certain key guys especially need to stay healthy in order for that to come to fruition. But right now, on paper, this is an extension of what could be a magnificent off season. It's not just what Tyler Boyd brings to the field. You know, he'll get open. He'll be a more than just a security blanket. He will be able to be a mismatch for a lot of third corners and nickel corners in the slot. That'll be a great thing. So I expect him to be a huge upgrade on the field. But the reason I love this is because of what he brings off the field. I mean, you've got a new coaching staff with Brian Callahan, the head coach, and of course Tyler Boyd has been in Cincinnati with Coach Callahan as offensive coordinator. He understands the nuances of this offense, and he'll be able to teach those things from the perspective of a player on the field to that wide receiver room. He also will be able to help quarterback Will Levis with the nuances of this offense relative to what wide receivers need from him. He'll also be able to help everybody there in the wide receiver and quarterback rooms understand what the new head coach is all about, what makes him tick, what he expects, what he means when he says this, how he responds when you do that, you know, how you need to impress him, because there are certain things that he's looking for from you. And to have a guy that's been with him for years is gold, because now Will Levis will have a translator, right? And so it's not just that Bill Callahan won't know how to talk to Will Levis, et cetera, but now you've got a translator both for the scheme and between the two men, and it'll be a magnificent help off the field. And then he upgrades this wide receiver room on the field, and I think overall this is, as considering it's a one-year deal at a max of $4.5 million, so it's not a financial commitment and it's not a financial risk. This is about as good a thing as it could have happened to the quarterback and receiver rooms in the first year of Coach Callahan's tenure.
Trevor, you scared me for a little bit there, because I love the move too. And it feels like a very low risk, high reward move. I love the deal. It's low commitment. It's not a long term commitment. I love his history with Brian Callahan. I love that Will Levis now has another veteran pass catcher. I love that Tyler Boyd is, you know, comfortable in the role as a wide receiver three, as a high-end wide receiver three. I love everything about it. But Trevor, we have a lot of Titans fans that are now wondering, what does this mean for Treylon Burks?
Well, I don't know that Treylon Burks, if this means that he'll be edged out, really affects anything. Because since he's been with the Titans, he hasn't really affected anything anyway. And so there is no downside from a standpoint of the team and for Titans fans if this means the phase out of Treylon Burks. If it lights a fire under Treylon Burks, great. I hope that Burks is smart enough to learn from DeAndre Hopkins last year and to learn from Tyler Boyd right now this year so that he can rekindle his career. But When you look at the footballs that are available, you know, there's only one on the field, and now you've got three wide receivers that will be ostensibly ahead of Burks on the depth chart, DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, and Tyler Boyd. Then it's not just wide receivers that Burks has to worry about. It's pass catchers. And at running back, you've got two excellent pass catchers out of the backfield in Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. And as a matter of fact, Spears can go line up in the slot as well, or even in an H-back position and motion him across the line, behind the line of scrimmage to hide him there. There's all kinds of things a creative offensive coordinator can do when you've got two running backs that can both run and catch. And so that's competition for that football for Treylon Burks. And then Chigakonkwo, last year a lot of people, including myself, thought would have a breakout season as a receiving tight end, and it didn't work out. Well, he still has the ability to do that. And if he is able to take that next step up and be a guy that they must target during the game because he becomes the mismatch in terms of size and speed and all the rest of it that a good, fast receiving tight end can be, then that's another guy who's competition for that one football for Treylon Burks. And so, you know, there are a lot of pass catchers coming from a lot of different directions before you even think about Treylon Burks. And he is going to have to absolutely force the coaches to get him the ball and force Will Levis to get him the ball. And it's interesting, the offensive coordinator for the Titans, you know, made an interesting statement when asked by him. He talked about how he's a first-round draft choice and you can see the natural talent, but he's going to have to earn everything he gets. Well, he's got a lot more competition now because of the addition of Tony Pollard and the addition now of Tyler Boyd.
I'm 100% with you, Trevor. And look, a lot of people have said, well, we hope that Treylon Burks takes that next step forward. We hope that Treylon Burks can stay healthy. I can't hope. Hope is not a strategy in the National Football League. Trevor Maddich is with us, ESPN college football analyst. Trevor, I was looking at, you know, the way too early 2025 NFL mock drafts, and I know, yawn, eye roll, I get it, groan, I understand, but I was more so looking at it because I think it's interesting to see the projected finish of some of these teams. A lot of the mock drafts that I took a look at had the Titans picking in the top five, and a lot of the mock drafts had the Titans taking a quarterback in the top five, and I can't help but think that that's a direct indictment of Will Levis. Why do you think that the national media is maybe isn't as optimistic about Will Levis, maybe some local pundits are?
You know, Caroline, that's a great question. And I don't want to be disparaging of people in the national media, but you know, you and I have watched, and so many others here in this market have watched every snap that Will Levis has taken last year. And I think when you look at it from a standpoint of watching his highlights and lowlights, watching a few games, and looking then at the grades and the stats, Will Levis doesn't look all that great, especially when you look at the grades. You know, you combine his quarterback rating and his passer rating and his, you know, sack frequency and all these different things that often downgrade a quarterback. But those of us who have watched every single play understand there's a little bit more to it than that. First of all, you didn't see him make the same mistake over and over and over again. You would see him get smashed and then get up and stay focused and learn from whatever mistake he made and get back in the game and try to apply it. And you could see those things. That's a very important component, in my opinion, for a young quarterback in terms of evaluating what his future might be. Does he have the ability to stay focused under adversity? And I think Will Levis showed us that. You know, the arm talent is fine.
It's there.
There's not a problem with the arm talent. Yeah. But the ability mentally to stay focused through adversity is important. And the adversity for Will Levis last year was epic. Epic. You know, he had DeAndre Hopkins to throw the ball to, but that's about it. And from a standpoint of wide receiver and tight end, certainly. And defenders knew that, and they focused on making it difficult to complete a lot of balls to DeAndre Hopkins. And everybody else, well, not necessarily electric in terms of being able to help a young quarterback. But worse than that was the offensive line, which should have its own wing or at least its own display in Canton, Ohio, at the Pro Football Hall of Fame for being one of the most inept offensive lines in the history of this game. Now, a lot of it was injury, and there were all kinds of guys forced into playing that shouldn't have been there. But overall, the production was horrific. And it's not just lack of a running game and lack of protection. It's also taking pass catchers out of the pass pattern. There were a lot of times when the defense would rush four guys, but you'd have a tight end chipping on one tackle or just flat double teaming, and then a running back chipping or flat out double teaming on another tackle, the other tackle. So now you've got two guys that should be out in the pass pattern stressing the coverage that are in helping to protect when there's only four guys rushing, right? So you got seven blocking four, and sometimes that worked. Well, that makes it a lot harder for Will Levis to be able to get his stats and his grade and things like that up. And so if you're not watching those things, then you can easily look at his grades and his numbers and say, yeah, he had a pretty bad year. The truth of it is, in the intangibles, I thought he had a year that's incredibly encouraging. Now, I don't know if he's going to be a good quarterback in this league. He's going to have to continue that mental growth that I saw him start last season. But if he's able to do that with a better line in front of him and a deeper, more explosive group of pass catchers, then I think he's got the ability to be the quarterback of the future. Remains to be seen, but I'm encouraged.
Trevor, I'm glad that you brought up the Guinness Book bad offensive line because although the Titans have addressed some positions on the line this offseason, they still have a ways to go. When it comes to receivers, I defer to D. Mace. When it comes to offensive linemen, Trevor, I defer to you. So we'll get into that with Trevor Maddich coming up next. How do the Titans continue to build the offensive line? We'll continue our conversation with ESPN college football analyst Trevor Maddich coming up next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman and Company were brought to you by Jarrett Company's Fire and Commercial Plumbing HVAC Division. Call 615-515-1270 or visit them online at jarrettcompaniesinc.com. We're talking with Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook and Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters, Trev, we know Titans select J.C. Latham with the first and the first round of the NFL draft. Rand Carthon says they're going to play him at left tackle. That leaves the question: who is playing right tackle for the Tennessee Titans? Of the options the Titans currently have on the roster, Nicholas Petit-Frere, Jalen Duncan coming into his second year, Dylan Radins, do you view any of those three as a passable option for the Titans at right tackle?
You know, passable, I think, is where they are right now, Caroline, because they don't have what they're really looking for. At right tackle. So they're going to have competition between several guys and hope that at least one of them can have that competition rise up to be serviceable at right tackle. And the thing is, right tackle last year with Dylan Radin settling into that spot actually was not the weak spot of the offensive line. Far from it. I don't know that Dylan Radin is the future right tackle. I think moving into right guard and letting him compete there would better suit his skill set. But the fact that he got a lot better last year with the playing time gives me encouragement that with the coaching of Bill Callahan, offensive line coach now, that he'll get better. I think that Nicholas Petit-Frere has a lot more athleticism than Radins and is much more suited physically to playing tackle. And I think that he has a chance to make a big jump this year and surprise a lot of people. Not necessarily be a dominant player, but to be an effective, steady player, which is all they really need at that position right now, as they're looking for the next Jack Conklin. They're looking for the next, devastating, cruel, crushing blocker on the right side, which Nicholas Petit-Frere is not. But can he be that steady guy that you could rely on? And, again, you talk about like the national media looking in, and they look at the Pro Football Focus grades and things like that. And it looks like that Petit-Frere just has been horrible. And he has been, but if you take a step back and take a look at the bigger picture, his rookie year, he was forced into playing because of injury, I believe. And he did some good things and he struggled. Last year, he got himself suspended for the first six games while everybody else was getting into football shape and getting up to speed with the speed of the game. He was watching it on TV. And so finally he comes back and he struggles and then finally gets hurt himself. And so his first 2 years, I don't think are it's not fair to judge what his future could be. This year, however, is. And I think this year, having been in the weight room now for a couple of years, having the coaching staff that he has now, and having gone through the adversity that he's gone through his first 2 years, it's all going to be about his mental toughness. If he is mentally tough, and if he can bear down, and if he can grab adversity with his jaws by the neck and shake it until it's defeated and then toss it into the ditch as he moves forward, then he's going to be a steady player for this team. If he can't do that, then physically he's not going to be able to overcome what would be a mental deficiency. So I'm very interested in looking at the toughness that Nicholas Petitfrere shows physically, which would be a manifestation of his mental toughness. Because if he's able to do that, I think he's good enough to be good enough at right tackle for this whole thing to function.
You bring up Bill Callahan. I do want to get into what I am calling the Bill Callahan effect. But as far as Nicholas Petitfrere is concerned, I feel like I can say the same thing about him that I did about Treylon Burks. You hope that he takes that next step forward. You hope that he can be available and stay on the field. But Trev, hope is not a strategy. Do the Titans need to go out and find another tackle option that can plug and play if Nicholas Petitfrere can't make those strides and improvements that you say he needs to make? And
Right.
if they do,
And
then who?
well, it's fair that this is kind of like Burks in terms of production, certainly, and in terms of reliability. But I think it's a little bit different than Burks because Petitfrere didn't come in, having gone to the buffet enough to, or at least appeared to have gone to the buffet enough to have given himself a really bad reputation with his own team coming into his first offseason. And so, I think it was a little bit different situation. But yeah, he is in a position where, just like Burks, they're going to give him a chance and they're going to toss him aside without thinking twice and move forward, having forgotten he even existed, if he and Burks don't step up and force them to look at them differently. I think that Petitfrere has a better chance to step into that role where we say, yeah, that guy had struggled the first couple of years, but look at him now. I think Petitfrere has a better chance to do that. And frankly, the team needs Petitfrere to do that more than they need Burks to do it.
Do you feel that Nicholas Petitfrere has a better chance of doing that because of his ability or because there's not as much competition in that offensive line room?
I think it's both. With free agency at wide receiver, bringing in Tyler Boyd and Calvin Ridley, and by the way, they drafted a guy who's got a lot of speed as well in the later rounds, and that guy's going to be on the team because he is he'll be a great special teams player. I can't say he's going to be on the team. I'd be surprised if he's not, because he should be a great special teams player in addition to having speed to stretch the field. So, with the addition of the new guys, I think that Burks has a lot more competition. Petitfrere is sitting out there hanging in space in basically a vacuum at right tackle, especially if they move Dylan Raiden's inside to right guard. So it'll be his opportunity to lose. Whereas Treylon Burks, it's not that way. Treylon Burks is going to have to force his way into the conversation, whereas Petitfrere right now doesn't have a whole lot of competition at right tackle. But then that's one of the reasons that they need him to step up in a way that they don't necessarily need Burks to, because who else is going to do it?
We're talking with Trevor Matich, ESPN college football analyst. So let's say that the Titans starting offensive line going into week one, J.C. Latham at left tackle, Peter Skoronski at left guard, of course, Lloyd Cushenberry at center, Dylan Raiden's at right guard, Nicholas Petitfrere at right tackle. How much more improved is the offensive line from last year? And how would you feel about it if that was the case, if that's how it pans out?
Comparatively, it's as if you had a garage band of people that just picked up their instruments because they thought it would be fun to have a band, and they're learning how to play, and then in walked the Rolling Stones in 1969. That's the difference. Now, I'm not saying that this offensive line would be great, but the difference is enormous, because you will have assuming J.C. Latham is able to do what he needs to do and become a reliable, solid left tackle, and then eventually a devastating one because he already is a devastating run blocker. Assuming that Peter Skoronski at left guard continues to grow, and Lloyd Cushenberry at center, we know what he's got. He's a young, experienced veteran starter. It's all great. Just that gives them left tackle, left guard, center. That'll be one of the best young trios on that side of the line in the NFL. One of the best in the NFL as soon as Latham gets up to speed and assuming that Skoronski continues to grow. And that alone is awesome because you had Skoronski last year on an island and he had a 270-pound center on his right from left guard position. And he had a rotating cast of tissue paper at left tackle. And Skoronski too often was trying to block his guy and then help the guys on either side. And then he would lose track of his guy. In the last game of the year against the Jaguars, it looked to me like Skoronski said, okay, I'm going to do my job. And if those guys can't do theirs, then they can't. And he had a phenomenal game. Well, I think that those three positions are going to be rock solid as soon as Latham gets up to speed. Then on the right side, that's where they have to have guys that are at least steady and reliable, if not game changers. They won't be game changers. But if they're steady and reliable, then the difference in this offensive line is going to be enormous. And Will Levis at quarterback is going to have much more time to throw to a diverse group of pass catchers like he never had last year. And I'm very excited. I think this offseason, assuming people stay healthy, and we're talking about the guys, the corners on defense, free agents, and stuff like that. But if guys stay relatively healthy and play to what I expect them to be, we'll look back on this offseason and put a gold star on the forehead of the entire front office.
Getting me fired up, Trevor. I think you're
Yeah,
getting the
I'm
Titans
excited.
fans fired up too.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk myself out of it, Caroline. I'm trying to talk myself out of it, but I keep looking at what they did and where they did it in terms of positions, and I can't talk myself out of it.
Last one for you, Trevor, before he lets you go. Switching quickly to the defensive side of the ball, the Titans select Devondre Sweat with the 38th overall pick in the second round. And a lot of the evaluation or the grading of that pick is really like the player, don't love the position given some of the red flags. The DWI at the beginning of April, his playing weight, the fact that his weight was an issue at Texas. If you were in a position to coach Devondre Sweat and kind of bring him into the NFL, how would you approach a player like that that's coming in with some question marks?
I don't know, Caroline. Do you know of a way to make celery taste like steak?
Is that how you feel Devondre Sweat is? A
Yeah.
celery? Piece of celery?
No, I think if you can make celery taste like steak, then he could gorge on celery and be
Oh, I
happy,
see
I
what you're
guess.
saying. I
Yeah.
see what you're
No,
saying.
it all comes down to money. You've got to give him an incentive in the contract or a side contract for money, or excuse me, for food. And really what they need to do, either he needs to hire a dietitian and a cook, same person, to cook at home for him, all of his meals, or the team needs to do it. And he needs to agree to that. That's all he's going to eat. And that dietitian needs to make sure that food is really tasty and not calorie rich. So he could be chomping all the live long day and he's not putting down cheesecake. He's putting down things that still tastes good to him, but aren't cheesecake, that kind of a thing. And then pay him extra money, a lot of extra money, if he hits certain weight goals. So that's how to do it. You've got to turn it into a monetary incentive, not just what we're going to take away from you because we're not going to let you play. You might end up getting cut or whatever, but more money, more incentive for doing it right, because I don't think that his agent will allow them to put in a rider in his regular contract that they'll take away from the money that he would normally get as a second round pick. You've got to offer him extra money on top of that. But the truth of it is that also comes down to character. And my wife is a master chef. She is just incredible. And I'm in the process of losing weight too, and she's helping. Last night, she made this astonishing salad. It had so much goop in it, I don't even know what it was,
Yeah.
right? But it just tasted great. It felt great. It was all kinds of, it was a party, the salad. It was massive and it had very few calories for the size of it. And I got to sit there and eat that. And it took a long time to eat it. And it was satisfying to eat that salad. And it didn't have a whole lot of calories. The Titans need to make sure that there's somebody cooking for T'Vondre Sweat that'll provide him with those kinds of meals. And then he has to be a Navy SEAL focus on making sure he doesn't go outside of that. And if he does that, then he's going to end up a lot happier with his NFL career than he ever would be if he sneaks off to, you know, to the buffet.
Well, your wife might be for hire for the Titans here soon.
Let me tell you something. I don't know if they can afford her,
Trevor
but if they can, she'd be the one.
Maddich, ESPN college football analyst. Trev, really appreciate your time as always. Appreciate you for stopping by, and we'll catch up with you soon.
It's always great to talk with you, Caroline. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Trevor. Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst. He is the best. He loves the Tyler Boyd signing, and frankly, I do too. I love it. All right, coming up next, let's get back into the Predators. We'll hear from Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette at the top of the hour, the end of season press conference. I want to get back into your Predators phones, your reaction to some of the UC Saros conversation. Do you move on from UC Saros? Do you resign UC Saros? Adam and I are both under the impression of it might just be time to move on. Into your phones on this coming up next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063, The Game.
When it comes to Marner, I trust you 100%. You're closer to that than I am.
If he gets a number from a place that he can envision him being in the next 8 years, the deal gets done this summer.
Okay. So the Leafs would have to be open to letting teams negotiate with Darren Ferris.
100%.
Yeah, I think they would.
100%. It's open. It's open. And like, figure out the teams that would trade for him, which are the teams that could sign him long term, and which are the teams that interest him.
Yeah, give us a
list.
That's
it.
Well, sure. That's literally what I have here.
But to this point, and I will, again, Nick, I will defer to you on this one. To this point, they've shown no interest in doing that. And I think that that's what I would do. If I was the Maple Leafs, I would go to him and say, look, where do you want to go?
Yeah.
And
we'll do whatever we can to make this deal
100%.
Happen.
You know, you look at teams who would want offense, who might have something to trade, who are competitive. You think of a team like Nashville, a team like Vegas could have potentially say, you want a guy, Carolina,
Justin,
Islanders.
I think there would be 29 teams looking at him.
That was Elliot Friedman on the Real Kiper and Born podcast on Sportsnet talking about Mitch Marner. And I know that's probably the number one topic of conversation in Toronto right now is what's the future of the Leafs? What's the future of Mitch Marner? I mean, the Leafs just re-signed Austin Matthews. He's not going anywhere. It seems like Mitch Marner is really the easiest movable asset right now in Toronto. And you heard right there on the podcast, what about some teams that are in need of offense, have the cap space? What about a team like Nashville? Your thoughts, Adam, on the Mitch Marner sweepstakes?
Yeah, I don't want to take away from Mitch Marner's talent because he is immensely talented. I mean, he is an elite point producer. He's also great in his own end. He was a Selke Trophy finalist last year as, you know, as a player up for the award for best defensive forward. Over the past 5 years, these are the only players in the NHL who have more points than Mitch Marner. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Nathan MacKinnon, Artemi Panarin, Austin Matthews, and David Pastrnak. That's the whole list. Like, he is an elite point producer. He's mostly a playmaker. So, I mean, he can score goals. I mean, he's scored 30 goals a number of times, but his primary skill is setting players up. So that's one question I have is, do you need an elite playmaker or do you need someone whose bread and butter is putting the puck in the net? The other thing I worry about with Mitch Marner is, and this is just completely from afar, you know, I've never interacted with Mitch Marner, so I can't speak to any personal anecdotes, but I think the issue with him in Toronto is, you know, it seems like the spotlight is a, you know, it burns too brightly on him. He doesn't seem to rise to the occasion when the spotlight is on him. His career averages across the board per game in terms of goals and points and assists go down in the regular from the regular season into the playoffs. And I think this postseason was the perfect example. Auston Matthews missed a few games, but he still had a signature moment in that series. William Nylander missed a few games against the Bruins, but still had a signature moment in that series. Mitch Marner did not raise his game when his team needed it the most. And because he has 1 year left on his contract, it seems like if there's going to be massive changes in Toronto, he's probably going to be the guy that gets moved out, though he does have full control over his situation. Again, this is from afar. I'm not sure if Mitch Marner checks the serial winner box that Barry Trotz prioritizes. And I had this conversation over text with Jared the other day, and he's right that you can't have a team full of those guys. Like, it's good to have them, but you can't, not every player is going to be that. But for someone who has placed such a priority on culture, I'm not sure if Mitch Marner is the guy that fits that. And that's just from my opinion from afar. So I'm not sure. I mean, look, if the Predators were able to land Mitch Marner, it would be huge.
What if Ryan O'Reilly or Luke Shen kind of came to his defense, former teammates?
They would know.
Would that sway you at all?
But they were former teammates for a limited time.
Right.
Like, Ryan O'Reilly was a teammate of Mitch Marner's for two months.
Trade deadline.
So, and Shen, I'm trying to think, because Shen
maybe
played
a season or two?
Yeah, I mean, Shen would have been gone from Toronto when Marner came in, because I think he started his career in Toronto, and then he would have come back. So, yeah, I mean, they could speak to their experience with him in Toronto for a couple of months, but it's not the same as someone who has a longer history with him. Like, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen as players, but it's not like they were longstanding teammates. So, I don't see Marner as a fit. I really don't. I just don't know if he fits what Barry Trotz wants to build.
There are not enough boxes that are checked for me. Because Mitch Marner, as you mentioned, his contract is up after this upcoming season, and he carries an $11 million cap hit. So not only do you have to trade assets to acquire Mitch Marner, like, you're not acquiring Mitch Marner if you're not going to sign him to that next deal.
And he's probably going to want at least $12 million.
He's going to want a raise. And I'm sorry, if I'm paying you $12 million, I need you to show up in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I need you to be that guy. I need you to be hands down, indisputable, the number one goal scorer, elite forward, big boy forward, if you want to use Jared's vocabulary term. I don't know if I'm completely convinced that Mitch Marner is that guy. And if I'm paying you $12 million, I need to know that you are that guy. Plus the questions of his character. Is he the best guy in the locker room? Barry Trotz is a big locker room culture kind of general manager. And I like that about Barry.
I think part of it is also, you know, Marner grew up in the Toronto area, rooted for the Maple Leafs growing up, plays for the Maple Leafs, has a lot of people in town, a lot of people in his ear. I mean, I have to imagine that's really difficult. Now, obviously, if goes to another team, that's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. This is not a knock on Mitch Marner, the player, because he is an elite offensive player. There is no doubt about that. But I think you need to prioritize someone whose number one skill is scoring goals.
Yeah.
That is not Mitch Marner's number one skill. His number one skill is being a setup man, which is important. But you need someone who can score goals. And Mitch Marner, that is not his number one talent.
You bring up Luke Shen, maybe some, you know, current Predators advocating for former teammates. There's another name that could be potentially on the market that a couple of current Predators fans could advocate for. And maybe doesn't have the same cost, maybe the same red flags that Mitch Marner has. But it could bring you that goal scoring that this team's been needing. We'll get into that coming up next. Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette's end of the season press conference in 15 minutes. Stillman and company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Steven Stamkos is now going to be a free agent. I've had more than one person come up to me, Elliot, and say, don't be surprised if the Predators, if he becomes available, would not jump in there and maybe make a play for him. And I had not thought of that as a remote possibility until these last couple of weeks when some people have thrown that out at me. What do you think about that?
Well, Willie, let me just say first, with the caveat that I think if Tampa Bay – makes any kind of reasonably competitive offer, I think Stamkos will stay. Because I believe that is his choice and that is what he wants. And I think if the Lightning are, like, they're not going to give him the best offer, I don't think. But if they give him something competitive, he's going to be inclined to say, all right, let's get it done. Now, if he gets to July 1st, I think it's possible that players like Lou Shen and Ryan McDonough might kidnap him from Florida and bring him to Tennessee. You know, I do I think that's impossible? No. I, as long as the Lightning are in the ballpark, they are the favorites to keep him.
That was Elliot Friedman on Caroline Willie and D-Mace last Thursday. Stillman & Company, Caroline Fenton and Adam Vingan in for Jared Stillman today. So we were talking about Mitch Marner, and it's a little bit too rich for my blood. The fit doesn't feel right, but Elliot brings up a potential move for Steven Stamkos. So Steven Stamkos is a UFA this upcoming season. He's 34 years old, but you don't have to give up the assets to get him. You could sign him to a much more team-friendly deal than a $11, $12 million Mitch Marner deal. And Steven Stamkos is a goal scorer. 40 goals this past year, 34 the year before, 42 the year before that. Adam, more thought on Steven Stamkos.
I really like the idea. I really do. I mentioned that this morning with Robbie and Joe that, you know, we're talking about checking boxes with Marner. So let's check some boxes with Steven Stamkos. Is his primary job scoring goals? Yes. Check. Is he a proven winner? Yes. Check. Do you have teammates here? Not that he needs to be vouched for, but do you have teammates here who can vouch for him?
Yes.
Yes. Check. Like they're, you know, he's an older player. He's in his mid-30s. But I like the idea, like a player like him, like if he's going to hit the open market, like I wonder if he would sign a deal that's like 3 or 4 years. And it, you know, his current cap hit is $8.5 million. Maybe it's like 3 or 4 years, and it's $7.5 million or $8 million. Like he's probably gonna take a slight reduction, but it won't be over a long term contract. So there's not as much risk there. But I did the math. I did the math the other day. Over his final 23 games of the season, so his final 18 regular season games and his 5 playoff games against the Panthers in the first round, he scored 21 goals. He scored 21 goals in his final 23 games of the season. Doesn't matter that he's in his mid-30s. He can score. And he is that cultural fit for this that Barry Trotz prioritizes. So, quite frankly, I mean, like, yes, there's risk in signing an older player, but it'll be a shorter-term contract. And he's still an effective player. Like, I really like the idea of Steven Stamkos. I agree with Elliot. Like, it just seems like Tampa is eventually going to come to the table and re-sign their long-term captain who you know, was with that organization from the very beginning of his career.
Yeah.
But if that doesn't happen, if I'm Barry Trotz, I'm making a run at it. Absolutely.
Yeah, like, you're not going to sign Steven Stamkos to an 8-year deal.
No.
You're not going to sign him to a 6-year deal. It would be a short-term deal to kind of capitalize on the production that he's still producing at an incredibly high level. Mm-hmm. It's also with the caveat of what's Barry Trotz's direction in this offseason. Does he want to commit to the youth movement? Does he want to double down on some of these veterans that he added this past season that have been producing at a really high level? Ryan O'Reilly is still playing at a very high level. Gus Nyquist in his 34-year-old season is playing at a high level. That's what I'm interested to see, if Barry Trotz alludes to his intended direction and his end of season press conference coming up here. I don't expect it, but also OBB, open book Barry, you never know. But before we get to Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett's end of season press conference, I want to get into some of your phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan's on the line with a thought on Mitch Marner. What's up, Ryan?
What's up, guys? I fully agree. I don't want Mitch Marner. I watch hockey all the time. Mitch Marner got put on the third line because of his production during the NBA. During the playoffs, he threw a fit on the bench, throwing his gloves. His teammates Matthews and Nylander told him to grow up, pretty much. I want Stamkos. Not only does he bring the leadership, the captain, Stanley Cup champion, goal scoring, but what happens to the Predators in the playoffs? Their power play dies.
Yeah.
That man is a wizard on the power play, and you add him to the power play, now you would have Stamkos, Forsberg, and Yosti as your top three. So if a defense like Vancouver goes after them, they miss. Now you've got one of the three going to be wide open, the chance to score goals.
All and great. Also, yeah, go ahead, Ren.
Also, there's another one. It would be Mitch. It would be from Vegas, Marcisaw. He had 40 goals this year. He's also a goal scorer.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Ryan. All great points. The one thing that I would add, he mentioned Steven Stamkos on the power play. Well, what else did you need in the playoffs? Goal scorers. Mm-hmm. And Steven Stamkos has proven to show up in the playoffs.
Yeah, and he mentioned Jonathan Marchessault, another player I really like. You know, he's been a Vegas Golden Knight since the very beginning, was the Conn Smythe Trophy winner in the postseason last year, scored 42 goals this season, career high. We know how ruthless that organization is in terms of needing to make the necessary moves and getting rid of fan favorites if that's what it takes. So, you know, Marchessault is another good player. Like, I like him too. You know, I just, you know, with a player like that, with Stamkos, you have to be careful with the term. But yeah, I mean, I really like the idea of Steven Stamkos. I mean, it's very intriguing to me.
We'll hear from Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette live at the podium coming up next. The end of season press conference for the Nashville Predators. Caroline Fenton, Adam Vingan in for Jared Stillman. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.